Good morning. Good morning, people. It is me. It's your girl. It's your friend, Sharifa Hardy, host of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I have an amazing show for you today. Yesterday's show was amazing. Wednesday's show was amazing. We've had some amazing shows this week. And just from speaking with our guests in backstage, I know this show is going to be even more phenomenal. So I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go ahead and wake someone up. I need you to wake them up. Don't do it gently, right? Don't you know what I mean, splash cold water on them. Do it gently, but go to your neighbor's house. Go to your roommate. Tell them the Roundtable Talk Show is on. Go ahead and send that text. Send that message. Tweet it out. Let people know that we are on and we are providing you with information today here on this fabulous Friday. And you don't want them to miss it, because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show, especially not when you hear what the guests have to say today. So while you're doing what I asked you to do, I'm going to do my job and what I need to do. And I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest so we can go ahead and start the show. Our first guest is a dear friend of mine. I just love her to life. Okay, from the first time we met, we had an instant connection. She's been on a couple of different shows with me. We've done in-person interviews. But this lady is one of the best huggers you'll ever meet in the world. But aside from that, let me tell you what she does on a professional basis. She's an author, an amazing author, and her series is the Itty Bitty Self-Esteem Book. Please help me welcome Jade Elizabeth. Good morning, Jade. How are you?
I'm fantastic, Sharifa. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining me. What do you think of that introduction?
It was wonderful. Thank you. Sometimes introductions make you feel a little odd because people say such nice things about you and it puts you in a situation of receiving. And so many people, it's so hard for them to receive. So thank you for that very warm welcome.
Was that hard for you to receive? Because it was all true.
No, believe it or not, I've gotten over that. It used to be very difficult for me to receive. Now I just love to do that because I love to give, and you have to fill your cups, which means you have to receive in order to give a lot.
Yes, I think that's the things we learn, especially when we're dealing with self-esteem. And that's one of the things that you focus on. But before we even go back to your book, I want to go back to one of the best huggers in the world. I think that's part of self-esteem, though. You know what I mean? When someone is feeling low, when someone is going through something, you need that person that you can go to and they just give you that hug. You know what I mean? They don't have to say anything. They don't have to say a word. They don't have to judge. They just say, you know what? It's okay to feel whatever it is that you feel. And now in COVID, we can't even hug anymore. But we still have to find ways to connect. Have you found yourself finding different ways and other ways to connect with people?
Yeah, there's different things that you can do. Intention is a lot. And if people just actually sit, send love, and imagine themselves giving someone a hug, or imagine themselves receiving a hug, it can make a world of difference. I've watched people that were angry, and if you imagine yourself giving them a hug in your mind and really giving it and giving them the love that really we all need, it just changes their whole energy, their whole persona.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm imagining receiving hugs right now. I got a little distracted because the hugs were feeling good. The love was feeling good. It was just coming in and I was feeling
oh, yes, let me just hug you.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about your book, Jay.
Okay, so I wrote the book, and it's not like it's a big whoop for that people haven't heard a lot of the information that's in it, but it's an itty bitty book. It's teeny weeny tiny, and you can put it in your purse or keep it in your car. But the reason I wrote it is I don't want people to have to wait until they're my age to love themselves. Mm-hmm. I was adopted when I was young, and I was very active. Back in my day, they didn't label kids like they do today, like ADD, ADHD, all those. And I know that I probably would have fallen into those categories.
I would have too. That's what I always tell people. If they'd have had it when I was in school, they would have diagnosed with me with it. Believe me.
Yeah. So because of it, I always got bored. And when I got bored, I had to do things to keep myself entertained. And my parents' favorite way to punish me was to make me either sit in the middle of my bed with nothing or sit in a corner with nothing. So I was always getting into trouble. And for some reason, I thought I was bad. And that was the reason that I was adopted and thrown away.
Well, let me just ask you, Jay, did that, I'm just curious because when sitting in the bed, I know you felt bad, but did that help you to cure your activities? And the reason I asked that is because I was serious when I said if they had had it when I was a kid, I would have been diagnosed with it because I would finish all my work. I would be done. It would be correct and it would be accurate. And then I would want to go walk around and talk to people and have all these conversations. But my mom cured me of my ADD because when the teachers called my mom and they told her what I was doing, my mom said, "Well, give her some more work." And I didn't want any work. So I would just sit at my desk and be quiet. So I felt like my mom cured me. Did that cure you of those tendencies?
Not really. It actually made me more resentful. And the more that I had to sit by myself, the more I thought how bad I was. And it wasn't until I read a very, very old book. It was called Psychocybernetics. I'm not even sure if it's in print. If it is, I'm going to have to get it. But I realized that my thoughts and the way I thought about myself wasn't unusual. Other people thought that way. It's like, oh my God, I'm not alone. And that started my journey of me trying to heal the way how bad I felt. I mean, it was so bad that if someone was successful, I couldn't even talk to them. I didn't feel I was worthy enough to even hold a conversation. So to see me writing a book, to see me out here on a talk show, it's like, wow. But you know, there are so many out there that have wonderful gifts to share, and they just don't feel they're worthy enough, or they criticize it so much. And that was the reason I wrote the book.
So, how did you make the transition from feeling unworthy to feeling worthy?
It was a process, you know, it was taking different classes, it was reading different books, it was doing things like looking in the mirror and talking to myself. It was becoming aware of all of the things that I myself thought that was wrong with me and then analyze them. Because to me, awareness is the very, very first thing that is 50% of healing. You can't heal something you're not aware of. So if I saw something I didn't like, I would think to myself, so why don't I? What is it about that? Because if I'm seeing it, there must be something inside of me that resonates with that.
That's beautiful. And I love the aspect of talking to the mirror. You know, that's another thing that I did in the past when I was going through it, you know, being divorced twice, laid off 8 times. There were dark days, but I had to pull myself out. And part of the way I did was to look in the mirror because I felt so unloved. And I had to tell myself, Sharifa, if no one else in the world loves you, I love you and God loves you. But what happened is I started adding a person like almost every day. I'd be like, okay, I love you. God loves you. Your parents love you. Your kids love you. And then I was like, this long list of people who love me, but I had to literally look myself in the mirror and tell myself that I'm loved. This is so interesting, Jade. We are going to come back to you. I have so many more questions. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Count Classy, who is a new age hip hop artist. But I wanted to bring you into the conversation because I know sometimes we struggle with not only loving ourselves, but other people loving and accepting us as well, which is part of your message and how you're using your voice to bring love and awareness to the world. So good morning, Count Classy. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I wanted to put my shades on and pretend like I'm in California with the rest of you guys. the message of love is so critical right now, especially during these times and the global events. And like you said, I'm a hip hop artist, but I'm also queer. And that's mm-hmm. something that is so new to the genre. And mm-hmm. it is so pivotal to how we can express ourselves in this genre. And I've already received so much flack and pushback being a queer artist. And that just gave me more ammunition and strength to kind of say, I'm here, I'm visible, I'm representing for the next generation that don't have those role models. Mm-hmm. And you can't do anything about that because I love myself and mm-hmm. I love the people that are around me. So I totally love the intro to this segment.
Interesting. Now, I just tell you, I have so many questions, but I'm going to stay on the surface. And the only reason I'm going to stay on the surface is because I host three different talk shows, right? I have Ask Sharifa Videocast, I have the Roundtable Talk Show, and about a month ago, I launched a third talk show every Wednesday at 10 a.m. called Face to Face Talk Show. And the reason I launched this is because the world went crazy. You know, when something happens, you got to be like, okay, what can I do to help? And that's when all of the racial unrest and things started happening, all these conversations started happening. But I felt it was unfair to ask people on the Roundtable Talk Show political questions or deep questions because they just want to talk about their book. You know what I mean? They just want to promote their brand. But Count, I would definitely love to have you on that show. We'll go a little bit deeper because my initial question is, you know, on the surface is, and this is not a judgment about being queer, but why not just be a hip hop artist? You know what I mean? Whoever you are, however you showed up in the world as you, to me, isn't it more about the music?
It's a bit of both. And I see both sides. And I think that when you look at role models and representation on media, like when I was growing up, there were no gay people on TV. And if they were, they were usually the punchline of a joke or they had a terrible, sad, you know, story arc in their storyline or being queer and being visible in the genre that said, you know, F gay people, F woman, F femininity. It's important to kind of come out and say, this is who I am. And this is what I'm bringing to the table, because right now there's no representation like there is that I'm hoping Count Classy will bring. Lil Nas X is one of the most recent queer rappers, but he only came out after his success. And I look at Adam Lambert as well. During his time on American Idol, he had to suppress his queerness. And then he only came out, you know, sparkling and rainbows and all that jazz after his success. So my point is, I'm coming into this sparkling rainbows, bedazzling and kind of making my own lane. And whether you're going to ride in the car with me is up to you. But I'm here to kind of pave a lane and pave a path for any future artists that want to kind of join this lane.
Which is interesting because it reminds me of something that happened on a personal level, because you mentioned Adam Lambert. And I saw the whole thing with him coming out. But to me, when he came out, to me, I felt like it wasn't necessary for him to come out, because to me, it wasn't a surprise. I had a friend. I'm serious. No, because this is what happened.
No, I feel you.
Level. I had a friend, a dear friend of mine, whose birthday was somewhere around July something this month. So don't tell anybody. Don't tell my secrets. But a lot of the friends, we snuck out and we had a birthday party for him. It was his 45th birthday. We all went to high school. We've known each other for years. We do a lot of things together. We all on Facebook. And so we're all sitting at the table, lounging, having a drink, food, having a good time. And he stands up at the table. Everybody's at the table. He's looking square at me. And he goes, I just want everyone to know that I like women and I like men. And it's quiet. And he's looking at me and I'm looking at him, and he's looking at me and I'm looking at him. And he was like, do you have anything to say? And I'm like, what is it you want me to say? Like, I knew you were gay in high school. Like, that was no surprise. But for him, it was like this big declaration And you know, like he felt like we were going to run. I mean, I don't know, maybe.
And sometimes for the person, it is that big declaration, and they spend the whole moment thinking about how they want to come out and whether, you know, they maybe that friend of yours already knew that you'd be totally accepting, but there's always that doubt in their head, being like, are they actually going to accept me? Because there's so much in the world that says, no, I shouldn't exist or I shouldn't be here. And I think you look at intersectionality as well. Like, I think it's super important that while we don't fuss on ourselves on identities and labels, but we also make it clear that this is who I'm representing and this is the people that I'm representing.
Yeah, but I didn't even know that he didn't know I knew. Like that to me, that was the surprise in it, that he thought like all these years we thought he was someone else. But it's just interesting to hear you say how important it is to state it and to get the message out there. That's very interesting. You're an interesting count. I have more questions for you. I'll be right back with you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And our next guest is a mentor, a coach who works with hundreds of young people. We were talking backstage about love and the importance of his acceptance. I want to introduce to the show today Mr. Ken Russ. Good morning, Ken. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Happy Friday to everybody.
Happy Friday to you.
Thank you.
I love your art.
Oh yeah, that's actually my daughter's art. I can't claim that to be mine. She worked on that when probably from the time she was 5 to the time she was about 20. So yeah, that's all her stuff.
It's beautiful. I love it. What are your thoughts on the conversation thus far?
You know, for me, it's all about when you talk about self-esteem, I think it's all about knowing where you are and knowing where you're going. And one of the things that I try to do is, you know, sometimes I feel like the kids that are coming out of high school are somewhat ill prepared for, you know, the real world. And, you know, while they have all the information they need in the palm of their hand when it comes to, you know, to phones or iPads or whatever else they have, for me, it's all about, do they have a direction? A lot of times what happens to them is, you know, they get out of high school and it's almost like we say, you know, here's your axe, there's the forest, start chopping with no idea where they're going to end up. And it ends up being where life kind of happens to them instead of them happening to life, which I think is a complete, you know, sea change from how we currently prepare our kids. So I like to get the kids thinking, what do I want my life to look like? And I actually have them draw that out on a piece of paper with markers or whatever they want to do and get as specific as they possibly can. You know, am I a house person or am I a condo person or am I an apartment in the city person? Am I a truck person or a car or am I a public transit or an electric vehicle? I mean, I try to get them to think as specifically as they can and try to gain some awareness of, you know, what am I going to do for spiritually? What am I going to do for my hobbies? What am I going to do to take care of my health? What would be my favorite way to give back to the community? So I like to really prepare them for the long-term vision where they begin with the end in mind rather than just wandering aimlessly and hoping that someday life becomes good for them.
So tell us about the youth that you work with. Is this a program or you're at a school?
Well, it's both. I mean, it started out, you know, I have a company with 200 employees in it. So it started out of necessity. You know, I didn't have designs to become a life coach. I became one out of sheer necessity. You know, when you hire a lot of people, what happens is, you know, you find out that they don't necessarily know how to do their first checking account or open up their first credit card or find their first vehicle or their first apartment. And so it became a fun challenge for me to meet with these kids and together to draw this picture of the next 6 months, 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, and then take those things in apart by piece by piece, and then put those on the board and have them just start accomplishing them one at a time.
That's interesting, but you mentor them in a way that not many companies would. You know, usually what we do is we start a company, we start a job, and then we have that whole trial by fire. Most companies don't even have training. You know, the last company I worked for was American Express. To work at American Express, you have to be in training for 8 to 12 weeks before you even become an actual full-fledged employee. But most companies, they just this you start on Monday, 9 a.m. If you don't mess up too bad, you don't get fired. But And they will say it's because they don't have the time. I don't have the time. I don't have the time to train people. Just here's the cash register, push the buttons, and ring up the people. But how did you take the time or even get to the point where you discovered that this was vital, that you had to have it? Because I'm sure it increased the success of your business.
Well, I can just say it's simply this. We have a very tough business, so we had to create a culture that would attract people that would want to come there, work, stay, and get the things that they wanted out of their life within it. But I always tell the folks in my company and even the people that I mentor, you know, I can't get what I need out of this company or what this company needs for that matter until all of you get what you want first. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely mean that, because if you're going to build a team of loyal people, which we should all aspire to do to improve someone else's life, I think you should empower them to be, you know, self-driven, goal-oriented. They should have a clear vision of where they're going. And then hopefully they'll look at you and say, thank you for the training and the setup. Now, you know, get out of my way and let me do it. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, the entire society is propelled forward. And I think that can happen in a school, in a church, in a business, in any type of organization where you garner the power of people's experiences and the energy that people have to want to do better for themselves. And that's why I think mentoring is such a powerful tool.
With employees, though, there are many CEOs who have the fear that if people become too educated or too, you know, self-reliant, then they'll go start their own company, start their own business, and then they lose employees that way. Has that ever been a concern of yours?
No, because the people that think that way, Sharifa, they tend to hire a lot of people mm-hmm. and they tend to have to rehire a lot of people. Because I look at it this way, if someone is going to be that entrepreneurial thinking within my organization, whether they work for our company for 1 year, 3 years, or 5 years, or 10, I'm going to have the benefit of that amazing attitude and that amazing go-getter spirit, right? Mm-hmm. So I look at it as if they end up wanting to own their own company someday, fantastic, go do that. I'll have benefited from the experience of having that wonderful individual within my company. And at the same time, what tends to happen is people tend to hang around because they like the fact that you give them the independence. They like the fact that you push them and have the drive and the clarity for their future. And they kind of hang around because they think, wow, I can build a life for myself within this organization.
I think that's wonderful. More questions for you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And our next guest is a motivational speaker, an author, a 5-time best-selling author on Amazon, Ms. Lucy Ruth. Good morning, Lucy. How are you?
Good morning. I am doing well, and thank you for having me, and nice to meet you all. What a beautiful Friday, and it's the last day of July, and next tomorrow we're in August, and when this year started, who would have thought it that we'll be here doing this live on Zoom, and all the New Year's resolutions that everybody had at the beginning of the year. I had so many plans. I was so excited. I planned 2020 in the back of my head, and I was so excited about my plans, but that was not the plans for the universe. Mm-hmm. That was not the plans for all of us. So here we are, having to adapt to Zoom meetings, having to adapt to not having a social life, having to adapt to living in the moment. And in that moment, I took time during this isolation to write more books. So I published 2 books during this isolation, because my mental health, had it not been that I'm a writer, I don't think I'll be able to survive this. I don't think I would. Imagine just sitting at home and having nothing to do, zero motivation. So it goes back to that subject where we're talking about love. We got to love ourselves, that we are self-sufficient in our environment. And it starts by you looking at your gifts. Everybody is an artist within themselves. Some people, they're good at baking. That's considered art because you're making the art of bread, right? Some people are good at cooking. That is art because you're taking food and playing around with it. And because when it comes to art, you're using your hands, you're using your natural talent to make something beautiful. And that in itself is art. So when you love yourself and you have time to create, you're gonna have even more love for yourself, that you do not need an outsider to fill the void that is missing in your life. So that's been my journey. And growing up, I grew up in Zimbabwe, and I lost my mother. My mother committed suicide when I was 10.
Oh, wow, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yes, thank you. So I had to adapt, because I grew up seeing people celebrating their mother's birthdays, and when having Mother's Day, and when it was Mother's Day got me. Because on Facebook, you know how people are posting, oh, happy Mother's Day to my mom, this to my mom. That used to get me. That used to, like, okay, I don't care. It's your mother, you know? It's not my mother. How is that my problem? Why am I seeing all these happy mothers? I don't care what you've done with your mom. My mom is not here, so who cares? So I was so resentful to my mom. And I had, like I always say, every one of us has a hidden scar among themselves, because these scars are from a result of childhood traumas. And because of my trauma growing up of not having my mother when I needed her, imagine you're a teenager and you're going through life issues and you don't have a mother to tell what's going on. And I've had a lot of bad things happen as I was growing up, and just not having that person to pick up the phone and say, hi, mom, I'm having a bad day. Oh, I'm having a bad relationship. I'm having this. People are gossiping about you. People are doing all these things that society does, and you have nobody to go to. Nobody. It's not the same when you go to your aunt. It's not the same when you go to your friends. It's just not the same than having your own mother. So I had that resentment, and that really affected me. And I'm an emotional person. A lot of things, not that they hurt me as they did before, because I have learned to love myself. When I didn't love myself, I was subject to abuse. When you don't love yourself, people will abuse you. And in that moment, there is another version of you that is going to come out. So somebody says something, they say, oh, she's overly sensitive. Oh, she's like this. And society will give you names because of who you are, because of your past traumas. So I had to love me so that society doesn't hurt me anymore. And that was the birth of Lucy Ruth. I started writing books. I wrote a book called Debunk and Develop Your Mind, How to Transform the Negative Things of Life into a Positive Outcome. I also wrote about a book, How to Love Yourself After Bullying and Abuse.
That is wonderful. Like, Jade, she needs a hug. You got to give her a hug, Jade.
Okay.
Jade is sending you love, Lucy. You feel it. You receive it. It's being sent way over to you. But you know, one of the things that I learned from this show is that no matter how diverse people are, is you always find the commonalities between them. You find those core things that brings us together as humanity. And so we introduced Jade Elizabeth as our first guest. And Jade started off talking about being adopted. So Jade didn't have her birth mother there. Then we come full circle to Lucy, who talks about her mother committing suicide. Lucy didn't have her mother there. It's so important for us to have core people in our life that love us and support us. But then also, I love to showcase people who didn't have those things. So when other people make excuses for why they can't do something, I can say, okay, hold on. Let me send you the link for July 31st episode of the Roundtable Talk Show, where I spoke to people who were adopted, mothers committed suicide, five-time best-selling Amazon author. I don't take excuses from anyone. I don't care if your left leg fell off. I don't care about none of that. Whatever your situation is, somebody's been in the worst situation. Somebody's made it. Yeah, I told you. I don't know why I'm feeling the spirit move today. We're going to have some church up here today. Count, talk to me. Did you have those important people in your life to support you?
Honestly, I did. I'm very fortunate. Even when I came out to my friends and family, they were super supportive. They were kind of all like, yeah, well, we know, but See? Here's the affirmation. Mm-hmm. And like growing up, you know, growing up queer, growing up biracial, you do tend to find the people that are similar to you. And it's important to not only, I mean, make friends with everyone that's different, you know, from you, so you can learn about different lifestyles, but finding those people that have the same commonalities, like you said, the more you talk to somebody, you're going to find rooted commonalities of shared lived experiences that you can talk about and build a relationship with. And that's something that's super important, just being a human being and going back to the concept of love. I love this episode, so let's keep talking about love.
You know, if I may jump in, Sharifa, my daughter was gay. And I remember how hard it was in the beginning for her to come out when you were talking about coming out to me, although I knew it from the time she was little. There's just a, you know, it was a mother's bond. And then Lucy was talking about suicide, and about 8 months ago, my grandson committed suicide, left two children, wasn't married at the time, but left two children. So I know what that is like. And you sometimes think to yourself, what could I have done? How could I have made it easier for them?
Yes. You know, when it comes to suicide, the reason why I became a motivational speaker, I said, I kept hearing, you read about the news, they so-and-so, celebrities, everybody, like every society, despite our backgrounds, the challenges humanity faces is the same. So everybody is experiencing problems. I was in Africa, in Zimbabwe. Somebody is in Australia. Somebody is in America. Somebody is in Europe. Somebody is in Asia. But despite all these differences, every society has somebody who's taking their lives. And I said, you know what? I'm going to be their voice, because there's a lot of hidden traumas, the scars deep within our hearts. So the voice of the hopelessness, you know, I don't want to hear another suicide of a person that I know, and I'm here to be their voice. And when you experience suicide and you know somebody has killed themselves, you say, what should I have done? Should I have done something better? But we also have that guilt, that emotion of guilt, saying, oh, I wish I was there. I wish I had picked up the phone and spoken to him. I wish I'd done something. But it's not us. It's the person that is suffering with the trauma that needs to speak up. So I always say, speak out. You know, there's lots of help. There's a reason why you need to go through. There's a reason why you need to see tomorrow. There's a reason why your situation is not as bad as somebody else. You know, you could be suffering from depression. I was talking to a lady this morning when I was taking a walk. I'm like, we live in a society where people are complaining that wearing a mask is bad. Okay? Right. There's somebody who is not wearing a mask because they cannot afford it, and their governments are not giving them money. So the main thing they really need today just to get through is food, and they don't have money to buy food. They don't have food to put on the table, and you are here complaining about a mask, you know?
Yes, I definitely agree. That's one of the things my dad raised me with, that whole story. You know, when you think about the man with no shoes, then you have to think about the man with no feet. You know what I mean? And by the time my dad finishes his story, the man has no arms, no legs, no, right. You know, he's basically a nub. But the whole point is, no matter what your situation is, there's always someone who had it worse. And I want to go back to something that you said, Lucy, about using this opportunity to create. I make a lot of emotional posts. Jade knows me. Like, I make a lot of emotional posts on Facebook. And most people kind of go, ah, that's Sharifa. Like, pretty typical Sharifa. But I made a post one day, and it wasn't even one of my most emotional posts. It was really just something that I shared. But it was a post that I received, like, the most flack, the most pushback ever. And what it said was, if you're not using this time in quarantine to better yourself, then you're missing out on the opportunity of a lifetime. So I really thought nothing of it. Like, okay, yeah, like we have all this time, do something, create something. And people just was like, Sharifa, no. Like, if you just want to lay on the couch and veg, that's okay. If you want to just relax, that's okay. Like, it was all these different things of, if you are not motivated, it's okay. But because sometimes in society, we put so much pressure on people that if you're not doing this, if you're not this way, if you don't, you know, then you're not okay. And that pressure sometimes is what adds to the depression, because somebody could have read that and go, you know what? I don't feel like, you know, creating, then I'm missing this opportunity. And then they could do something else. We're often so hard on ourselves. And they pointed out that some people have been working, you know, for the last 40 years and they want to take 2 months off and not do something else. I saw you kind of nodding your head, Ken.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I wanted to say was, first off, back to Lucy's comment about suffering, you know, we've done a lot with Make-A-Wish over the last 20 years, and we've done wishes for kids. We're probably, I think we're on our 12th or 13th child at this point. And, you know, my own daughter suffered as well from a disease, a very terrible disease, but she's okay now. But I just have to tell you, when you think something, you're having a bad day, or like she said about the mask or whatever, and then you look at a child that's really battling, I mean, they're struggling, they're fighting just to stay alive, it puts a heck of a lot of that into perspective, you know? And then when you're talking about staying home, this is a really important point for me, because, you know, I read an article the other day about how 78% of parents during this time off discovered something about their child that was significant. Okay. So what does that mean? Did they discover something that maybe they could have headed off a problem? Or did they discover and renew a relationship that they had? Did they build some self-esteem that maybe wasn't there before? So for me, it's all about, I wish there was a way that we could identify, you know, the people that are in need, because from my personal perspective, you know, I don't know how many at-risk people there are out there, but there has to be at least one business or one mentor for everyone that's at risk. And if we could just find a way to connect those people, I know I don't get any better joy than helping someone, you know, start their life and getting them on a great and sustainable and morally right path. And I love to watch their progress, because it's like a team effort. And I just wish there was a way that we could connect more with the people that were in need, with the people that had the means to do that, because we could solve a heck of a lot of problems in a short period of time if we could just find a way to get those people together.
I had a lady on one of the shows who saw an idea from someone else, right? And so what she saw this woman do is write this letter to her neighbors. And it was specifically for the elderly and senior citizens, but it was also for all of the neighbors, that basically said, I just want you to know, if you need someone to talk to, or if you're elderly, you can't get out and you need someone to go to the grocery store for you. But the whole line was, if you need someone, I'm here to help. You know, here's my number. Right. And she did it. She said, here's my number. You know, I'm your neighbor. Give me a call. And look, to me, even was so much more interesting than that was the results that she received. She said she did not receive one person who said, I need help. She did not receive one person who said, can you go to the store for me? Can you do this for me? Can you bring this to me? But she says she received so many calls from neighbors who said, hey, we never met. I didn't even know who you were. You are. Let's, you know what I mean? And so it gave them just the opportunity to connect. And sometimes that's all we need, is for someone to say, you know what? You matter. You are important. I see you. And if you need to talk, I am here.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's great. I think so many, you know, this world would be such a better place if we could all just take a little more time to do that. And like you said, It does take time and it does take some sacrifice, but once you've done it, your whole being becomes much bigger, and you become such a, I mean, I hate to say a better person, but you become just a much more whole person when you've interacted with somebody in a way that that makes them better. So,
yeah, Cal.
Well, just based off of that point, I mean, you do feel you just feel happier and better knowing that you can help someone else. And I'm using the specific example. We have a Facebook group here in my town. I live in Milton, which is about 40-ish minutes from downtown Toronto. And we have a COVID assistance Facebook group. And it was for anyone who is immunocompromised, elderly, or they just had a child who maybe was sick and they weren't able to leave the house. And for every one person that needed assistance, there was like 25 people ready to help them.
That's great.
And it shows the importance of community, being neighborly, being morally right, and whether they do it for their own sense of gratification or whether they do it to kind of build a better community, it's moving in the right direction. And I wish that we've seen more of these type of actions and deliverables happening on a day-to-day, but unfortunately, they only seem to come out when we have pandemics or natural disasters or major shootings or things that really can shake us to our core, that kind of realize and kind of grounds ourselves to being human. And then we kind of go, okay, how can I help now? Versus yesterday where I was too busy, you know, getting to work on time, finishing that report and going home because I'm tired. I don't want to talk to nobody. So it's sad that we have to wait to these major events to happen to really see humanity come out. And I kind of wish that we can take that energy that we manifest and kind of adapt it onto the little things we do day to day.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, it's my opinion that we should find a way to get these great ideas and publicize them, because when I'm listening to what you just said, I'm nodding my head going, man, that is such a great idea. And there's a problem with that count, that it is a great idea and yet I didn't know about it. So the point is that, isn't there a way that wouldn't we be much better served if we could find this clearinghouse where good ideas live and they're put out across the airwaves so people could go, you know what? That's a heck of a great idea. I think I'm going to form myself a Facebook group and support. And to your point, it doesn't have to be a pandemic one. It can be a Facebook group support for any type of a group that's in need. I think that's just wonderful.
But I also, go ahead, Lucy.
Yeah, that is wonderful. And you know what? This year, before the pandemic, my heart is in Africa. And when I living here in Canada, I see how blessed we are. I can stand up right now. I'll go on my tap over there, open water and drink water. A lot of children in Africa do not have that. I'm working on a project called Wells on Us. If everybody around us donated $2, we could build community boreholes. We could do community wells for people to just have access to clean water. But one thing that I've realized is with causes, like what Sharif said earlier, it's not about peer pressuring somebody to be motivated to do something. Everybody responds to causes when it speaks to their heart. I could be crying, say, let's bring clean water to people in Africa. But if it's not coming from your heart, it's not your calling. And I also don't want to, you know, pressurize you to donate to something that is not coming from you. Because you find that there's some things that go on and you know what, they don't do anything for me. I'm not going to donate. But when it comes to giving clean water, that motivates me. So maybe we should bring all these ideas and also accept that it's okay if somebody doesn't want to support this cause, because like everybody, I believe on a spiritual point that everybody has a calling. And when that calling is not there or their spirit hasn't been touched, they're not going to act as passionate as I am with giving people clean water.
I agree. I understand. And when I'm interviewed and people ask me that number one question, what is it to be an entrepreneur? My response is an entrepreneur has a calling. Like even my book, How to Be an Entrepreneur, Signs You Might Be an Entrepreneur, How to Discover the Entrepreneur in You, rather, is the essence of an entrepreneur, to me, has a calling. It's something that they can't put down. It's something that they can't stop doing. It's something that they usually have set down. You know, I like even Count, he's a hip hop artist, but I still put that as the realm of an entrepreneur. So not even knowing him on a personal level, I can most likely guess, because an entrepreneur has a calling, that he's put his music down several times. Like, there were times where he was like, this is what I'm going to do with my life, all adamant. And then like 2 months later, 2 years later, he was like, you know what? I don't think that's for me. Let me go work at the local, you know, corporate America, do that for a couple of years. Something happens. He hears some music at a club or, you know, on the radio. He was like, I got to do it. It comes back to it because it's something that we have to do. And we find, and the reason entrepreneurship to me is a calling, because to me, entrepreneurship and small businesses is one of the most important thing that there is, because that's how we feed our families. That's how we're able to afford the house that has the running water that for us to bathe in. You know what I mean? That's how we build communities. That's how we change the world, by creating entrepreneurs. And more entrepreneurs, more, what's the word that you use? Basically nonprofits. More things are birthed during tragedy and global pandemics in these times than any other time, because we have no choice. You're going to see entrepreneurs popping up from now into like 2100, because we're forced to create. Was I wrong, Count? Did my psychic telekinesis was off?
No, you're correct. Right on the money.
Yeah. So what was, how many times did you pick it up, or when did you start it? You've probably been singing, or you're like musical all your life.
I've been musical my whole life. As a kid, I played piano and I enjoyed singing so much. I starred in every musical that I could find the lead role, and which was my doing. It was the audition, of course. But going back to my album, for example, like, I started writing that album back in 2013, mm-hmm. and we're in 2020 now, and I just released my album in 2020, but it took that entire process. Sorry?
Congratulations.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And it took that entire process to get re-inspired and, you know, scratch that. This is not working for me anymore. I don't want this to be a part of my artistry. I want to focus on this direction. And it's only recently now that I've become a lot more political with my artistry. Mm-hmm. My experience is through ghostwriting. So I wasn't able to be on the forefront and being and speaking on these issues like I am now as Count Classy. But it is a journey, and you have to have your calling. You have to have that voice inside you that inspires you. And that's why I wrote that, you know, I tattooed that on my arm. I don't know if you can see it, but it's inspire here and mm-hmm. create here. And those two words are super, super important to me, because I want to inspire others the same way that I've been inspired growing up. And I'm getting emotional right now. And I want to create solutions to the problems that we have right now. And some of the best solutions out there is music. And there's something that music does to one's body that completely takes them out of, you know, the shit or the crap hole that we're in. I don't even know if we're allowed to swear, but the crap hole that we're in, and you kind of have this escapism, and you kind of feel that vibe inside you, and you kind of say, oh, you know what? I feel a little bit better now, even though it's only been 3 minutes.
That is wonderful. I've been trying all day to see your shirt. Like, what does your shirt say?
Oh, it says Happy Holidays. I actually got it in San Diego when I was there in January. My family lives in NoHo, North Hollywood.
Okay.
With my uncle Tone Loke. And when I went to San Diego, I got my new earrings and the shirt, so I'm feeling fresh.
I love it. Until Uncle Tone Loke, Sharifa Hardy wants to talk to him. Let's sit down and have a conversation.
Absolutely.
But, yes, make that phone call. But I want to go back to the 7-year process, because I learned so many words from people that I use them on other shows, that I ask guests these questions, like I thought of it, but the term was re-inspired. Okay, so during that 7-year process, did you step away from the music? Did you go, I don't know? And then how did you get re-inspired specifically?
Yeah, I actually went to university, and mm-hmm. then I completed my honors degree there. And after that, I went into, you know, corporate, and I started working mm-hmm. these jobs that no one really wants to work. And then I was like, I can't do this. I don't want to do this anymore. So through my networks in Los Angeles, I was able to ghostwrite and kind of put my foot in the door and, you know, work on one client. Then one client became two, two became five. And now I'm ghostwriting to major labels and doing social media ghostwriting. And then from there, I was like, I love what I'm doing here. And I'm loving that I'm able to create art with other people and creating movements and creating culture. And I want to do that for myself. And I want to do that to, you know, the queer folks that are out there. And going back to the discussion on suicide, I mean, the suicide rate is huge for LGBTQ youth, especially transgender youth. And it's important to even go back earlier to the question, why am I branding myself as queer and hip hop? It's because I have people that have DM'd me and said, thank you for representing us in this, in your music. The fact that I talk about my relationships with men and I normalize them, people resonate with that and they thank me for that. And I'm not writing that to be, I'm not writing this to get thanks from people, but it's a very humbling to see how your art and your music instills change into others and changes their mindsets as well.
I think that's wonderful, but it just proves the point. Every successful person has a story. Every successful person has a story. People may just hear about you today, Count, and they think, okay, you're an overnight success. Every overnight success, you know, pretty much has been in the business for 20, 25 years. They've been doing it. They've been, you know, building their story. It's just when the media hears about it or the media lets you hear about it. But, you know, you go through all these different stages. I have not sat down and spoke with anyone who doesn't have a story, who doesn't have a struggle. And that's why I always say, if you can do it, if they can do it, if I can do it, then anyone can do it. And that's why this show is so important to me. I've been enjoying this conversation. However, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives, and simply let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance. And we're going to start with you, Jade.
Well, for me, it's all about once you learn about really loving who you are, start to share that, teach that to others. You know, I have classes that I teach, and then my students go out and they teach others, and then their students go and teach others. And it's the only way that we're going to have the world that we all really and truly want to see, is the love and the caring that we have. If you don't love yourself, it's going to be difficult to love other people. You will be disappointed because people do not keep you 100% in their thoughts. So the most important thing is loving who you are. And as you do, then you can share more with the world because you're filled.
I think those are some beautiful words. But where can we pick up a copy of your book?
I'm on Amazon.com. I actually have three books. I also have two Reiki manuals out there because I'm a Reiki master and teacher, and my students didn't want to write their own. So I actually posted my first and second degree manuals that they can actually buy and teach from. So
That's amazing. We're going to have to check it out, Lucy.
Now, I know that my book is also on Nook and all those other places that you can get ebooks at. I'm not even sure where they all are, but I know that there's probably 10 or 12 different places you can find my book.
Okay. Should we start at jadeelizabeth.com?
Yes, because if you go to my website and go to About Jade, there's actually a link on the page for all of my books.
Have to check out jadeelizabeth.com and get people to tune in to go ahead and order your book. Wonderful. Lucy, what do you have for us?
Okay, so as we are going through these trying times of our lives, I just want to encourage everybody who's listening that, listen, life gets better, you know? these things have happened before. 100 years ago, they had the Spanish flu and stuff like this. Life gets better. So focus on the good things in your life. Be thankful and have gratitude that you are here and you can actually watch this live recording or this show. So in your times when you are by yourself, the world is hopeless right now. There's a lot of hopelessness going on. Do not compare your situation to others. Money is tight for a lot of people during this pandemic. Consolidate your debts. If you must, do not go into money depression. All these things, all these challenges that we are facing, we can overcome them. But you have to be there and take the step. You have to be there for yourself emotionally. Take the step to bring change. Love yourself enough that you want to go to bed in peace without worrying about bills. Listen, if money comes, money goes. Do not worry yourself. Take care of yourself. My books are on Amazon. Lucy Ruth, I have a book called Living Your Life in Reverse. It's talk about connecting with nature. Maybe this is the time to connect with nature and reconnect with your families, your loved ones. That book is available on Amazon, and also it's available on Barnes & Noble. So Barnes & Noble, Lucy Ruth, Amazon Lucy Ruth, or Amazon Debunk and Develop Your Mind. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Lucy, have you ever considered recording guided meditations?
No.
You give it some thought. Like, I'm good at noticing talent, but your voice is so soothing. Like, I would put on my little headset and be like, money comes, money goes. You know what I mean? Like, I need that. I'm giving you a whole new career, Lucy. Work with me. But don't forget the royalties. Ain't that right, Count? You got to get those royalties.
Awesome. Thank you. I'll start doing that.
She's right.
Thank you.
What do you have for us, Ken?
Well, I would just say that, you know, I wrote the book Blue Collar Cash so that I could tell young people that, you know, there are opportunities that may or may not involve college for you if that's not your path. And I've always believed that college is for people who need it. Obviously, if you're going to operate on people's bodies, or if you're going to manage money or teach or engineer a building, you need to go to school. But if that can't happen for you, there are still so many ways to make your life great. And one of the things that I talk about in the book, Blue Collar Cash, is to make sure that you understand how to think properly. And as Lucy said, this will pass. So let's think 1, 3, 5 years ahead. We're tough people, we're resilient, and we're persistent. And we're in much more control of our lives than we think we are, as long as we just get our heads straight and think about what we want our lives to eventually look like. So thank you for having me. I really appreciate the time today.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining me. I enjoyed it as well. Count, go ahead and take us on out.
I think that in no matter what situation, you always want to look at the people that are the helpers, the ones who want to bring light and love into your life. And you always want to try to bring them in, because you stay on your own, you become miserable, depressed, you think about your problems. But if you share your life with somebody, whether it's a friend, a romantic partner, your parents, a teacher, a guardian, you become more enriched because you learn from each other and you grow with each other. And I think that it's important to take a breather, relax, enjoy the blessings you have all around you, like Lucy was saying. And we talked about that a lot today. And I'm going to plug in my album here, 7 Deadly Sins, but especially the one song on here, Good Vibes, featuring Canadian rap icon Choclair. It's all about living in the moment, smelling the flowers, maybe rolling a joint or drinking a good glass of whiskey that you have, and just being thankful that you are alive. The sun is out and it's shining, so we should be smiling.
Yes, everybody just needs to smile, especially enjoying this sunny California Long Beach weather. I am enjoying it. We've been having a heat wave. It's been a lot of fun, but I have enjoyed this show. I've enjoyed having all of my guests here today. I want to thank you for being here on the Roundtable Talk Show. I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives. And just because you're watching it in the archives doesn't mean you can't share the show, whether you watched it today, tomorrow, 2 months from now, it doesn't matter. Please go ahead and share this show, because your friends need to hear the love, the information, the joy that we have shared here today. But don't just share the show, support our guests. I put their information, their websites in the post. Check them out. Go ahead and order a copy of their books, get their music, find out what they have going on. And then when you're finished doing all that, come take a seat at the round table. Be a guest. Visit the website at AskSharifah.com. Until Monday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, everyone have a safe and a blessed weekend. Bye now.